And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, JP from Carlsbad.
Hi, I'm JP. I'm an alcoholic. This room's bigger than I thought. Hey, I'm grateful to be here. I want to thank Randy for asking me to come down. I met Randy at a 7 a.m. attitude adjustment meeting. He was on vacation and met him there last year. And he asked me to come down here, and I thank the group for allowing me to participate in my own recovery. I'm sober by the grace of God today in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I couldn't say that some years ago. I grew up in Chicago in the Midwest, and grew up in a large Irish Catholic family. My dad's a doctor. My mom's a nurse. I have two older sisters, four younger brothers. Nobody drank, so I can't blame it on that as much as I'd like to. I grew up in a normal, everyday, kind of Norman Rockwell kind of family in the Midwest. And but I knew there was something different very early on. I was a good Catholic, Irish Catholic boy, became an altar boy, and that's where I had my first drink. So if there's any altar boys in the room, you know, I'd like to blame it on that, but I really can't. And but I went to an all-guys Catholic school, and when I was in high school, I worked in a men's clothing store, and a good friend of mine worked in a tuxedo rental place. And I learned a new meaning of identity theft, which is somebody returned their wallet to this friend of mine in his tuxedo, and the description fit JP perfectly. So he gave it to me, and I owe that guy an amends. I just can't remember what his name was. But I was 15 years old, and I was the one elected to purchase the booze. And I actually think I looked about like I look now. I worked in a men's clothing store, so I looked about like this. And I didn't have a driver's license, but I was the one who would go in with the IDs. In Illinois, there were no pictures on them, so I had my sophomore high school picture next to my license, so when I went to the liquor store, they'd look at the picture and look up at me. And then the state of Illinois made a serious mistake when I turned 16, which was they gave me a driver's license. And that was really the story of my life, because that driver's license was, you know, a pardon. It was my way to enter the world, and I used it from the moment I got it with total disregard for anything and anyone. And I began to drink in high school. A good friend of mine's father was an alcoholic, which was really nice because we could steal from his bottle during the week and drink on weekends. And then we would take a little bit into high school. I went to an all-guys school, so we'd go to the visitor locker rooms, and that's where we would drink before school. And I got out of school and went away to college, and did not like that. That was just not for me, and I left, and which was a real disappointment to my family, because everyone in my family went to college, and, well, I went there. I just left real quick, you know. It just... It didn't make sense to me that you would go away with all these 18 to 22-year-old kids and grow up. And I thought there has to be something better than this. And so I left. And at my 18th birthday, I was went down to see a friend perform in Chicago. And on the way home, I got pulled over in front of the Elmwood Park police station. And the police officer had the nerve to open the door, and I fell out. And that is kind of the way my life started. That was at 18. You needed to be 21 to drink. But once again, I had total disregard for any laws whatsoever. I'm many years into sobriety. My wife, who I brought with me tonight, who's not an alcoholic, diagnosed me with oppositionally defiant disorder. And that's many years into sobriety, so... Of course, she's not an alcoholic, so, you know, what would she know? but I moved away from my folks and into an apartment. I lived in a high-rise in the suburbs of Chicago, and by the time I was 20 years old, my drinking had escalated pretty dramatically, and it was more important for me to drink than to pay any bill. And I figured I worked during the day, and I went out drinking at night, So when the gas and electric bill came, I thought it's probably really not that important to pay that because I'm not there much, you know. And I'll just light a candle when I get home, and they'll turn the lights out, you know, electricity off, and it really won't make too much difference. That's kind of the mindset of a 20-year-old who has a serious drinking problem. And that's exactly what I did. Only one night, the candle that I lit started a fire. And I was in a high-rise fire when I was 20 years old. And, you know, as I look back on my drinking career, I have the newspaper articles or the pictures of that place. And, you know, most of my drinking took me to places that, unlike I'm sure those of you who may have sat at home and drank, I was just one that just had to be out there. And so my drinking career has taken me through some pretty dark and ugly places, and that was one of them. And when I was, by the time I was 21, I was having a lot of problems with the police. I mean, they were pulling me over for things. I mean, they were just like pulling me over. They were writing me tickets, and I would fight them. You know, I looked good in a suit, so I would walk into the courtroom like this. You know, I think they thought I was an attorney or something. I would question them, you know, and I would fight these tickets. But after a while, it was building up, and the state of Illinois, after so many of them, they want to take it away from you. They want to take this license away from you. I dare them. And it was getting kind of hot around there, and I thought, you know, there's got to be something better than this. So I said to my girlfriend, why don't we move? And she said, where? And I said, somewhere. You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, someplace warm. I mean, this is too cold back here. So how about Florida or Arizona or New Mexico or, better yet, California? So we moved to California. I was 22 years old, and, you know, her car was just fine, but my ego at that point was so overinflated that it was like, well, let's have somebody drive your car out there, your little Datsun, and I'll contact the Cadillac dealer and see if they have a car going to California. See, I bartended, and I bartended before I was 21. A friend of mine managed a bar in Chicago, and I used to go down and bartend, and I watched all these flashy dressing guys coming in, and they had pockets full of money. They were driving really nice-looking cars, and they were chasing little girls around the bar, trying to convince them that they weren't going to do what they had every intention of doing. And I thought, you know, I want some of that. I mean, that really looked good. I mean, that really looked good. I mean, they had a pocket full of money, and it was like, what do you do? One of the guys said, I sell cars. I said, bingo, that's me. You know, would you buy a car from this man? And one of my customers was the manager of a car dealership down the street, and I went in to see him and got a job. And, you know, I have to tell you, this is 35 years later, but it's still the greatest business in the world. You know? I still love it. I don't do the things that those men used to do back then. But I will tell you that I came out to California. I did find a Cadillac from the Cadillac dealership, drove it out here, and dropped it off in Oceanside. And that was 33 years ago, and I never left. I mean, I set foot in California, and I was in love with everything other than the California Highway Patrol. Those people, they were much meaner than the Illinois State Police. And I was here a month or so, and they would sit across the street from wherever I was drinking, and they would pull me over. And so I got my second 502 and my third 502. If anyone doesn't know how they nicknamed them 502s, I'm here to tell you that if you drink and drive every day, every 502 days, you're going to get one of those things. And that's why they call them 502s, which is what happened to me. I started drinking and driving when I was 18, and every 502 days, I had one of those. And I was about 24 and decided that it was time to do a few things, so I went into business and decided that I would start taking applications for marriage. I thought, it's time I settle down. Too many problems here in California, and if I just had a business and I had a nice little lady to sit down, you know, settle down with, I'd be fine. So I found a young lady, local California girl, and I married her. And then I thought, you know, what I really need to do is start a family. So let's have some kids. And so I had a little boy, and it was getting really difficult because I was out drinking a lot. And I would pick up the phone, and I would call her and tell her I was on my way, and sometimes I wouldn't get home. And I would say, well, you know, I just fell asleep on the side of the road, but you know what? I was waking up in some funny places. And my drinking career took me to a place where I got my, I was up in a very famous resort up in the Carlsbad area, and I had been drinking there all night, and they pulled up my car, the valet pulled up my car, and I got in it, and I decided that I would drive out the entrance because I didn't really know how to get out of there, so I started to drive out the entrance, and he tried to stop me, and the next thing I know, he was spraying something in my eyes, and he said I ran over his foot, and he placed me under citizen's arrest, and they called the police, and I stood in front of that judge, and she said, looking at your record, when is the last time you got a regular ticket? And I said, well, what do you mean? She's like, speeding or something. I said, well, I don't get those. So that's what I thought. And my drinking continued. And like I said, the lane got pretty narrow. The road got pretty narrow toward the end. And then I went and got another one. And that judge said, you know what? I think I got your problem down pat. You need to go to AA. And I said, what would you lead you to that conclusion? You know. And she said, so I'm going to sentence you to 3 AA meetings a week. I said, for how long? And she said, 3 years. She said, actually, 2 a week for your second year and 1 a week for the third year. And I said, don't you have that backwards? Don't you build up to this thing? She said, no, that's not how we do it. And she said, and the probation department will get in touch, you know, you'll set up a meeting with them. I had a meeting to go see the probation department on the 10th of October, 1985. And on Monday night, I was up in Carlsbad Car Country, and someone said, you know, it's Monday night football. Why don't we go up to the bar in Carlsbad? And I said, sure. And walked into the bar and put the money on the bar and went out to the payphone. Back then, we had payphones to call my we didn't have cell phones. We had payphones. Called my wife, tell her I was on my way home. I was just stopping for a drink. And came back, somebody took the money off the bar, one of my friends. And I thought, well, yeah, you'll get yours in just a minute. So he left to go call his wife, and I took his keys and just put them in my pocket. And the night went on, and at 2 in the morning, I left that little bar up in Carlsbad, and I headed over to the I-5, and, geez, I didn't have that far to go. Headed down the 5 and thought, you know what, I'm going to take his keys, and I'm going to throw him in the middle of Carlsbad Car Country amongst all those cars. He'll never find him. I'll teach him to take my money off the bar. And I pulled on the off-ramp, and I pulled in front of this car, and the lights went on. Now, I don't know about you, but if they sentence you to AA on your 7th 502, I don't know what they're going to do on your 8th. So I thought, you know, I'm in a Cadillac, and he's in a Dodge, and I'll outrun him. Well, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, I don't know what you guys are thinking, but for me, it was like, you know what, it made perfect sense. And as I read the police report later, it indicated that the car was in excess of 100 miles an hour through Palomar Port Road. And at the end of that road, you have a decision to make, left, right, or straight. And I went straight, unbeknownst to me. It's a gated community. And I went through that gate. Obviously, it's closed at 2 in the morning. So I went through the gate at a fairly high rate of speed, knocked the gate over, and knocked over an SDG&E box, phone box, did some serious damage. And, of course, the car I was driving was not mine. I was dressed about like I am now, and I grabbed my briefcase, and he was coming, and I was running. And I don't know. I'm somebody who watches a lot of television. Some of you guys may have watched television back then. My favorite show was Hunter. It was a cop show, okay? I loved watching Hunter. And I don't know, those people look like they could run and jump over things, and I did too. For some strange reason, briefcase and suit, I thought you could get over a six-foot fence. That is not the case, and I did find one fence open. One gate open, and it was a very small little room. It's about the size of what I'm standing on, and I was in a condominium, and I was standing. The only thing I could find is a little bush, and I kind of went and hid behind the bush. But the house was owned by a woman that was an insomniac, and she, well, there was a helicopter and a spotlight, and this is not my idea of how, when I left that bar, what I had intended to do. After all, I was on my way home, you know, 7 hours before. But needless to say, I don't react very well with shotguns, but that's exactly what I had pointed at me, and there was this dog barking, and God, heaven help me if I was to do that today, because I would not have gotten down the street or anywhere else. But I did the only thing that a good alcoholic like me could do when he got me up off the ground and handcuffed, and I said, I bet you're looking for the driver. And I never lost my... I watch a lot of television, you know. I said, you know, he went... You know, when I turned right, he turned left. And, of course, it wasn't my car, so needless to say, I wasn't too far-fetched. The driver did go that way. He just wound up right where I was. And they interrogated me, you know. It wasn't like I was a terrorist or something, but they interrogated me for quite a long time because of my story. I said, obviously, I was riding with him. He crashed the car. He couldn't get out the door, so you might have seen me leave from the driver's side, but who are you going to believe, me or your eyes? I just couldn't get out the right door. He was long gone by the time your police car pulled up there, and I stuck with that story. And when the next morning when I got up and read the list of charges, it was very long. And then I called my wife, and she said, I'll be down in a little while. I have to get your son up. And so I was at the Vista Jail, and as they released me from the jail, the only thing I remember, and we read it tonight, about incomprehensible demoralization, but I will tell you that through the bars of the Vista Jail at the release point, I saw the eyes not of my wife, who I have seen that look many, many times. I saw the eyes of that little three-year-old boy. And it is a look that I hope you never have to experience. I would never want to see that look ever. I will tell you that she did come and pick me up, and I went home, and it was the loneliest day of my life. I paced that house, and I had to contact the dealer who owned the car that I had destroyed, and I learned about making amends that morning, by the way, long before I was sober. And I will tell you that by the grace of God, I've not had to have a drink since that moment, and I owe that entirely to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I spent that day, it was October 8th, 1985. I don't know why I called at that point, but I called the North County Central Office. I thank God for the people that answer those phones, because there was a woman on the phone that day, and she asked if I was okay and if I could get to a meeting. And she sent me to, it was an 11-step study meeting. Oh, that would be a great one for your first one. They nicknamed them the God Squad, and they were a group of men. There were women, but they weren't there that night. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, I had to go to these meetings anyway. I did not bring that court card because I didn't want them to know. And so I went early. I got dressed about like I am now. That's how you would get dressed to go to any meeting, I would think. So, and I sat in the parking lot with a pair of binoculars because I wanted to see who was coming in. I mean, I sat there and watched. I mean, I watched. I thought, like, that couldn't be it. I mean, and I went into the room, and I will tell you, I don't remember a lot about that first meeting, but I will tell you, I know that meeting. It's on Stevens in Solana Beach. I'll never forget that first night. And there were two men that cornered me, and I said, well, I have this friend that has this problem. And he said, I got a great idea. Why don't you bring him back here with you next week? And I said, do you have something that I could take to him? And he said, yeah. And he handed me this book. I said, well, the thing looks like 500 pages. He said, well, it is. So, well, do you have something smaller? So, I wanted, like, the Cliff Notes version. I mean, I went through my life looking for the Cliff Notes version. That's what I wanted. And he said, no, this will have to do. As I said, by the grace of God, I've not had to have a drink since that night. Those men said something to me. They said a couple things to me. They looked into my eyes, and they saw my soul. And those men said, you never have to do this ever again. You don't have to feel the way you're feeling right now. You don't have to live the way you're living. And I'm thinking, how do they know? Well, they knew. They knew that I knew that they knew. And they got me a meeting schedule, and I went home. I did come back the next week, and my life, geez, glad I got sober. I have been on the most incredible journey since that moment that I think anyone in Alcoholics Anonymous has ever been on. I truly believe that. I have found, I found the solution you had in these rooms. And I thank those in the rooms. I want to thank Bobby for sharing. And I want to congratulate the recipients of the cakes. You know, I love to be at AA celebrations because I love to see celebrations of this program and see how it works. Those men also said to me that I didn't ever have to drink ever again if I didn't want to. They told me I didn't have to drink again even if I wanted to. And you know what? I believed them. I had a big court case coming forward. So I was going to those meetings, and the second meeting I started getting those court cards signed. But I had to go to court for that last one. And needless to say, that was a pretty heavy experience. It took about 6 months to get it through the court system. And the judge that sentenced me to AA was a woman, and this one was a woman. For some reason, I had some problems with women. God obviously knew I had to deal with something there. So, she said, obviously, AA didn't work very well. I said, no, it's working just fine. And she said, well, I'm going to sentence you to jail. I said, but I own a business. She said, you didn't hear me. I'm going to sentence you to jail. I said, but I'm married. I have a 3-year-old boy. She said, I'm going to sentence you to jail. She said, and if you have a job, you can probably qualify for a work furlough program. So when I was 6 months sober, I was sentenced to jail for 6 months. I celebrated my first AA birthday in a work furlough program by Lincoln High School, Southeast San Diego. Southeast San Diego, Lincoln High School, I fit right in, you know. I look just a part down there. I didn't have a sponsor. I wasn't working the steps. I got a notice from the DMV. They were like Illinois. They wanted to take it away, but they said revoked. They said, well, what does that mean? They said, it means you can't drive. And I said, for how long? It's like, you can't drive ever. I said, well, wait a minute. If I committed murder, I'd be eligible for parole at some point. And they said, no, do not pass go. Do not collect $200. You don't drive. So I did the only thing that alcoholic like me would do with a job in Orange County. I drove without a license. And I would have friends that would say, you are such an incredibly wonderful driver since you got sober. I mean, you never go over the limit. I mean, there's no rolling stops, JP. You just you're amazing. I mean, that AA's really done a job on you. Well, it was in my second year that I got a sponsor. I'm really grateful for that man, because that man not only took me through the steps, he took me through the traditions. And you read those, and I wish we would read those at every single meeting. Because when I was in my second year of sobriety, I was at his house, and he handed me a three-legged stool, and he said, those three legs are all one length. And I said, yeah, right. And he said, one of those legs represents our legacy of recovery. That's our steps. And one of those legs represents our unity. That's the second step. And the third stands for the concepts, and that is our service. And he said, just always make sure the legs of your program are always of the same length, and your program won't tip over. And he said, but you are a bit of a con man, JP. So I'm going to have you have a commitment at every meeting you go to, because you could sell anything, including your way out of going to a meeting. So you got to have a commitment at every meeting. So sure enough, I had a commitment at every meeting I went to, and I think in some cases that saved my life. I have some friends of mine here tonight that are missing their home group. You know, I'm just so amazed, because these people taught me more about a love for this fellowship, and I'm so glad you're here tonight. That sponsor that I had did for me what I couldn't do for myself then. I think he saw the difficulty that he was going to have with me, and he was a gentleman. He didn't tell me what to do. He shared with me how he had done it. And that's what I found. The men, my home group is a men's meeting up in La Costa at Seaside Men's up in La Costa on Tuesday night. And if any of the men are ever up there, I invite you to come to that meeting. It's an incredible men's meeting. I've learned so much from those men. If any of the women, you can come to the 7 a.m. Attitude Adjustment Meeting, because we let women into that meeting. I will tell you that my journey has taken me to some very interesting places in AA. I will tell you that anything I say from this point forward is nothing new. Because it was passed on to me. And everything that I lost in my life is a direct result of my alcoholism. My alcoholism took me to some very dark places. I don't mind looking back on those, because the journey this way has been really incredible. I've had the opportunity to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous, and through that service, serve in many different capacities and serve the members of the San Diego area as the delegate. In 1996, I was your delegate to the General Service Conference. And I've had the opportunity to see that this is bigger than me, and it's bigger than my home group, and it's bigger than this group, that we have a problem that goes throughout the world, and there's a common solution. And I was reading about that today, and there is a solution in the book that really hits home. I found that book to be my textbook today. I found that the steps of this program have helped me in so many ways. I met a man when I moved to California 32 years ago that I work for today. And when I interviewed with him, though, and I've known him for 32 years, he said, well, JP, you have a rather sordid past. And now I have to tell you that 24 years ago, I was in a high-speed police chase through the middle of Carlsbad car country, 100 miles an hour. And today, I manage one of the businesses on that street. Now, if you don't think that that's a miracle to come from point A to point B, I will tell you that it is not possible without sobriety. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I truly love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thank Alcoholics Anonymous for helping me find a God of my understanding. And, you know, this morning when I got up, I said a prayer, and it was a prayer that I say every morning because it asks for God's will. It asks for God to direct my thinking. It doesn't always work very well because sometimes I want to take it back. But it works really well if I give it to him. And I pray to God that he keeps me sober today for the rest of my life, one day at a time. That I don't have to take a drink today, and I shouldn't have to take a drink tomorrow if I stay in that zone. You know, I know that I need to stay in the middle of the pack. You people taught me everything I know about life today. I have a way of life that I have never could not dream when I got here. I mean, my sponsor told me, you give me a list, JP, of the things you want. And if I showed you that list today, you'd laugh. Because what I have today, I have an incredible woman in my life today. You might meet her later, Betty. She's here with me. How? I don't know, because a friend of mine called before we came down here, and he said, remember to be honest. And he said, please tell Betty that she's in my prayers. I have a lovely woman in my life today. That's just the love of my life. And we've been married for, we just celebrated 10 years of sobriety. That little three-year-old boy was over for dinner. He's now 27 years old. He's married and planning a family. He's never had a drink. Well, his mom's an alcoholic and his dad's an alcoholic. So, and he's an engineer. So I think he puts two and two together much better than I ever did. The beauty of that story is not that I'm sober those 24 years, but I've been able to be in that little boy's life from the time he was three through elementary school and through middle school and through high school and through college. And I got to be there with him when he graduated with honors. And, you know, he's an aeronautical engineer today. He designs unmanned planes and helicopters, you know, that fly themselves. Well, they don't fly themselves. Somebody's flying them, but they do it from a computer. And, you know, that little boy, I was there at his wedding 2 years ago. He's married to a lovely young lady. And to be able to be in those people's lives today is not possible without this program, without this fellowship, without my sobriety. And my sobriety is not possible without all of you, without God in my life, working in my life. I've had so many incredible opportunities. My boss that I work for now held a meeting of all the dealers in car country and said he wanted to have a task force, and he said, I'm going to ask JP to head it up because he'll keep us on track and keep us on task. Well, I learned to stay on task in this fellowship because I wasn't that way when I got here. And he said, I want to introduce you to the man that's going to be your liaison with the city of Carlsbad. He's our city councilman. And I said, great. Went up, introduced myself, and I said, what did you do prior to being a city councilman? He said, I was a Carlsbad police officer. Oh, we do come full circle, don't we? Yeah. You know, I have all those police reports in that file cabinet. I just got to go through them because I may have another amends or two to make in that batch. Might have missed the first go around. But I truly mean this. I am so grateful to this program. It has put my life back together in ways I never knew were possible. I live my life in 180 degrees different than when I got here. And I owe everything in my life to this program. And I owe everything in my life to God. And I never knew that something like that was even possible. I don't know you could live the way I lived, you know. I mean, at the end, the road was very dark. I didn't want to answer the phone because I thought there might be someone on the other end. I didn't want to answer the door because I thought I probably had owed someone. I didn't exactly live my life in such a manner that was very respectful. And I think it's been a long road back. And if any of you are new, and I, a lot of people introduce themselves as new, and I really welcome you, it's really difficult from the point you're sitting to see that there's a way through this. But I'm here to tell you that there's an incredible life ahead of you if you stay sober. I'm also here to tell you that if you've never gone out, you don't have to go out. And that's what those men told me. They told me that they would hold my hand and they would walk me there. I never knew that a relationship with other men was possible the way I know it today. I never knew that there was a relationship I could have with anyone that was the way I have it today. I never knew this. I was like missing the day they handed out the rule book on how to get through life. As a little boy when I was in kindergarten, the teacher sent home my report card in kindergarten that said that I had missed 32 days or something, some ungodly number of days. And in her remarks, she put, maybe this is why he doesn't get along well with others. And, you know, I have that report card. I keep those things, you know. All the damage and my wreckage of my past, I have. That telephone pole I cut in half as I went off that embankment and cut that pole in half, I have that. That SDG&E box and phone box I knocked over, I got all those bills. I paid them, you know, but I've kind of kept them, you know. I was 2 years sober, and someone talked me into being on a Southern California Convention committee, and he said, JP, would you mind driving up? And I said, no problem. He said, my car doesn't work very well, and would you mind driving? I said, no problem, Tom. So he came and he picked me up, and we headed up the 5, up in the middle of Camp Pendleton, driving north, and I said, Tom, what do you do for a living? He said, I work for the DMV. Imagine that. What do you do, Tom, with the DMV? He said, I take people's licenses away. I said, I owe an amends, and I just can't do it. And I couldn't do it. That little 3-year-old boy was 5 years old. He was in the back seat. He was going to come up because I told him there were donuts at this meeting. So he was there. I thought, well, I can't turn around. Well, I'll just never drive Tom up here again. And I never did drive him up there again. I said, you know what, Tom, I don't mind going up. Why don't you stay here in San Diego? I'll go up to the committee meeting. And lo and behold, I was about 4 years sober, and I got a letter from the DMV, and it said to call and schedule a meeting with a hearing officer. And I thought, you know, Tom works for the DMV. I called him and said, Tom, what is it that you do? And he said, I'm a hearing officer. I said, great. I said, Tom, I got this letter. And he said, what, do you want to start driving legally? And he said, JP, I can't hear your case. I mean, one alcoholic to another, why not, Tom? He said, JP, I can't hear your case. I said, well, what should I do? And he said, be honest. And so I went down, I met that man at the DMV, and he had his clipboard. He looked very official, and I said, why don't you put the clipboard down, because what I'm going to share with you, you don't have a tenth of. And he put that clipboard down, and I shared with him my story. And at the end of it, he said, that's the most amazing story I've ever heard. I'm not only going to give you back your license on a probationary period, I'm just going to give it back to you. Because anyone who could go from there to there, you know what? I was serving as the delegate from this area, and I got home, and on my answering machine was a call from Tom. Or I think it was before that, Tom asked me to come down and speak at a meeting in San Diego. I was at a hotel, and I said, what kind of meeting meets at a hotel? And he said, well, it's not an AA meeting, JP. It's a meeting for 75 hearing officers and investigators with the DMV. He said, no, Tom, no, you got the wrong guy. you need to go get someone from CPC, Cooperation with the Professional Community, not JP. And he said, no, I asked all your friends, and we took a survey, and with the 8502s, you're exactly who I want. And I did go down, and I did share with them, and, geez, they don't laugh like you guys do. I got some very strange looks, but on the way back to my car, Tom said, you know, JP, your friends were really trying hard to help you make amends to the people of the state of California, and I think we just handled that one. And then when I was the delegate, I did get a phone call from a gal in Sacramento that, and 2 weeks before, I had just gotten this all-new 5-year driver's license. You know, it's a due to your superior driving record. You qualify for the all-new 5-year driver's license. I thought there's got to be a mistake, but, you know, I'm sober and I'm honest, but you know what? The $5 is going in the mail. I'm sending this one off. I want my 5-year license. I want to know what that's like. And then this phone call came, and I thought, you know, they figured me out. I mean, I was 10, 11 years sober, but I really wanted that license. And the gal said, the reason for my call is my boss heard you speak at a meeting in San Diego about 6 years ago and wondered if you'd be our keynote speaker at our driver improvement seminar in Las Vegas. We'd like to fly you over to Las Vegas and have you be the keynote speaker in our driver improvement seminar. I said, I would be glad to, you know. They laughed a little more in Vegas, but... Maybe it was on the side of the casino that might have had something to do with it. You know, the hotel room was pretty, you know. So, at any rate, my journey has been one that's been really incredible. I've had so much fun. I have been able to go so many places. I found out that you could hop on an airplane, get off an airplane anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, and there's a meeting somewhere, you know. And those meetings, no matter where we go, you know, they're alcoholics like you and I. And, you know, I really want to thank you for asking me to come down, participate in my own recovery. And thanks for your time.